The Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab number 175 for November 10th, 2008. Greetings, folks, and welcome to the show. I'm Dave Hamilton. He's John Braun. Hi, John.
Who are you?
What's wrong?
It's been so long.
Yeah, it's been a while.
It's been weeks.
Exactly. Exactly. That's right.
But, you know, every now and then, I mean, you were traveling, and just every now and then, I think we need to take a little breather just to recharge our geek powers.
Yeah, that's true. I did the absolute worst thing travel-wise I've ever done. So, you know, I went to AdTech. And,
in New York City.
In New York.
And you're in New Hampshire.
Yeah, I'm in New Hampshire. I wanted to go. I had a meeting for the Association of Downloadable Media first thing in the morning at 10 a.m.
Yep.
And then I had a dinner scheduled with Greg Snyder and Sean McAndrew, two of our New York-based folks for Backbeat Media. And then lunch, I had the pleasure of having lunch with two Russian programmers that I've been working with for 10 years and have never even spoken with, let alone...
The guys that make the site work.
In a sense, yeah, yeah.
For a lot of things.
I won't bore you with the details, but of all the nuances of what they do. But I've been working with these guys for 10 years, never met them, never even spoken with them. It's all been email and instant message. And so we went out and had sushi and drank a little vodka. Not very much vodka, but we figured with, you know, the Russians, they had to pick vodka for us. So I wanted to do all this stuff. And as I started scheduling it, I noticed, oh, gosh, you know, hotels are like, it was going to be like $400 or $500 to get a hotel room for one night. And I thought, God, you know, I can do this round trip thing. And, you know, I'll just do a one day thing. And that way I can sleep in my own bed, which is always my preference anyway. So it was like, no problem. Well, you know, I went to bed on Sunday night at 11. I woke up at 4, drove to the airport, got on the plane, then get off at JFK. I took the subway in. So that's another hour.
You missed the TSA party.
Yes.
Because usually they like you because your name is the same as some other evil person.
Yes. No, I made it through security theater. No problem. And
security theater.
That's right. Security makes everybody feel secure because they see that everybody's, you know, doing their thing. They put on a nice show. It was smooth. It was, you know, there were no rough edges. These guys were no understudies that morning. So, you know, went through, did that, got to the meetings, did my whole day. And, you know, by the time I got back home, it was 2 a.m. And I thought, well, okay, at least I've saved the company some money. Well, then Tuesday and Wednesday, I was just totally shot because I had to be up first thing in the morning with the kids and everything. And it didn't save the company any money. It essentially turned me into a, you know, walking zombie for a day and a half. Mm-hmm. So I won't do that again. But it was fun. And, I'm going to Austin next week, so I'll talk a little bit about this now and then next week. I'll talk more, but I got one of those Kensington, and there's a bunch of companies that make them. I got one of those Kensington kind of snap-on iPhone battery reducers. It's just an extended battery, and it charges the iPhone from this little extra battery pack, but you can use it while it's doing it.
Charge it, or does it act as a external battery?
It acts as charging.
Okay.
It acts as a charger. The iPhone sees it as a charger. And it will pass through charge. So when you plug this thing in, you then plug.
Okay.
And it's actually really cool. And it worked really well for the day. I'm going to have more experience with it next week. So we'll talk more about it. But just figured I'd throw it out there because I knew I wasn't going to have a laptop with me all day. And I figured, well, I'll probably wind up taxing the battery on the iPhone. So so that's one little cool thing I found that we'll talk about a little bit more. You found something cool. Actually, our listeners pointed out two very cool things. And one of them you wrote about this morning for TMO on the site for your Mac Gadget.
Yes, I did. So Monday's Mac Gadget. Yes, it's back probably every 2 weeks or, you know, we'll see.
Cool.
But anyways, so the piece of software I found and basically what I pointed out is, in general, the Unix roots of Mac OS X, part of Unix being sometimes a server operating system, there are scripts that run daily, weekly, and monthly to just clean up all the garbage that you really don't need. It's helpful in the short term, but not in the long term. The problem is with a lot of portables, as I pointed out, and I think all of us do, is your computer's not on 24/7 for the most part. So what this does, it's a utility that will kind of nudge the operating system to do these things.
What's the name of the utility?
I'm sorry. Macaroni.
I like it.
And their logo is cool, too. It has a little noodle. But anyways, so Macaroni, what it does is, at the very minimum, it lets you view, but also schedule or force the daily, weekly, and monthly Unix scripts that normally run under OpenBSD or, you know, the BSD core that I guess Mac OS X is currently based on. The cool part, so number one, it lets you look at, if you click on one of these and it has a big text window, you can see all of the things it's trying to do. Well, that's kind of cool, because then you get to your inner geek in that you can see the commands that are running on the console level or the text level that are part of these scripts. But then it also, the next thing is, it lets you do a couple of other extra things. So some people wrote in and said, well, you know, I like some other utilities. They let me run these scripts. What I like is this lets you look into exactly what the scripts do. And the feedback from the terminal. Okay. But then also they have a couple of other options, and it's open actually to anything, but they have a repair permissions task and a remove localized files task, which, so two of those, the repair permissions, as we all know, permissions sometimes get screwed up and your Mac doesn't do what it should. Well, this is, you know, scheduling a task to check that. It may take a little while, so you got to think about when you'd want this run. But then another one, remove localized files. And other utilities do this, but it's cool in that I think what the aim is, you know, if you just downloaded something, eventually I'll cleanse that. Because a lot of times you have multiple languages and multiple resources in a file. You're never going to use them.
Okay, and so by localized files, I'm just going to try and crystallize this a little bit.
Yes.
What they mean is, if I install a piece of software and the only language I ever use is English, I don't care to have all of the other language packs built, you know, baked into that into, you know, whatever I've installed. So this will remove everything that I don't want to be there, essentially.
Exactly. So just like, you know, Mac OS, Windows, whatever, they all have versions that are keyed towards a certain region. Let's not assume that everybody reads and writes and wants to see English.
Sure.
For a moment. I'm sorry.
Well, sure.
I can't help it.
No, that's right. Well, and we do the podcast in English.
Okay.
So it's
sorry.
We have plenty of listeners whose primary language is not English. And I know this, but you know, it is the language we speak, but that certainly doesn't mean it's the language that everyone has to.
Yeah. So I think they actually default to. So I know a little Spanish. You probably do also, for being in Texas and just school and stuff like that.
School mostly. Yeah.
But I think their default is English and Spanish will keep, which I think is a safe assumption for most of the U.S. Otherwise, you can pick and choose which languages you want kept or stripped. Which you know, it can build up if you get a, you know, it's nice that application developers think of that, but when you don't need it, you don't need it. So
cool. Now, these scripts, without Macaroni in place, the scripts are supposed to run, and we've talked about this before, that sometimes they do, sometimes they don't, especially if a machine's asleep, it sort of gets into this fuzzy thing. Now, Macaroni, from what I see, claims that they will run these things, or it will run these things, on a regular schedule. You don't have to go out of your way to do it. You just need to, leave Macaroni running in the background? Is that how it works?
Well, I think for each task in their scheduled jobs window, which is the normal one you'll see in the article or their website.
Yep.
There's a schedule attached to that. The cool part is it shows you the last time it happened. And actually, in my case, it happened at like 1 a.m. So actually, this is an interesting, and it explains, I think, sometimes when, if you're up at 1 or 2 a.m. and all of a sudden your Mac becomes very unresponsive.
Yeah.
You know what I think it's doing? I think it's doing its maintenance task or tasks. Again, it could be daily, weekly, or monthly.
Right.
Because I wonder that sometimes. I mean, you've seen this too sometimes, Dave, especially if you use our favorite menu meters. All of a sudden, the read light goes on, and it's like, what are you doing?
Yeah, right. Huh.
And I think we're going to touch on that a little later about how tasks link to what's happening
Yeah, actually, that's right. Yeah, we have a question about that later. Okay,
cool.
So we got an email. Actually, we got several emails and several. And of course, for some reason, I've got this all organized the wrong way. But someone wrote it, and I'm not sure what this person's name is. So I'll just read the email. Hey, guys, I've recently finished listening to Mac Geek Gab 173, and I'm surprised to hear you did not know about Marco Polo. This freeware app can do a ton of great stuff. It looks for clues about the environment that it is in, such as time of day, any attached USB devices, what network you're connected to, power source if you're on a MacBook, and so on. Set up correctly, I reckon this could solve two of the listener problems, one of which is the guy with the classroom of Macs. And I'm not sure that that's... It can... So... Here's what this does. It's a piece of software. You install it, and it's a system preference pane, so it's always kind of sitting there. And you can configure it to watch for certain parameters. Like he said here, you can have it check what network you're connected to. For me, I can have it check what monitor is connected externally, and then you can have it also look for different Bonjour devices, or whether you're on Ethernet, or whether you're on airport, or what airport networks it sees. And with each of these pieces of criteria, you say, okay, if I have this, chances are I'm on, I'm at this location, and you kind of define locations within the software. Now, those locations can map to your network locations, or they can just be Marco Polo locations. And the idea is you say, okay, look, if my monitor is plugged in and I'm plugged into, a cinema display, and it's this, chances are I'm at home, and that's better than even. So I'll say about 75% chance. Then I could say, and if you see an HP LaserJet 3055 printer, that's a 50% chance that I'm at home, because most of the time that's true. But I've also got the same printer down at our office in Austin, so it's possible that I'm there. And you set different levels of confidence for each of these criteria that you set. And it works out really, really well. So you kind of do this, and then you can have it run things or set different settings based on where you are. So once it decides, okay, Dave's in his office, well, now it should set my static IP address for my, my computer, and, set up which is my default printer, and, all sorts of things. The one thing that I couldn't find it able to do, now it'll do shell scripts, so perhaps this is something I could do with a shell script, but I wanted it to set my time zone, because as I float around, I would really like my time zone to, certainly when I get back to the office, I would like it to set it back to Eastern time. And it doesn't. So, or at least I couldn't find it. Yeah. So it's pretty cool.
Does the iPhone do that?
The iPhone or the MacBook?
I'm sorry. So the MacBook probably doesn't, though. I've been reading more, and I sent you a little link here, Dave. But I've been reading more about this whole field of, I know where I am because my Wi-Fi adapter is this, and I see whatever and whatever.
I'm gonna pause the show here for a second, folks, and we're gonna fix John's Skype thing. Okay, we're back, and I think John, you're much clearer now. Say hi, John.
Hi, John.
this software's pretty cool, and two people this week mentioned it, at least two. I did not get through all the email that came through in the last couple of weeks, but people have mentioned it before, and I just never dug in. But it is definitely a cool thing found. So,
yep. And I guess it all touches on this whole, context aware computing kind of, MIT has been doing this for a long time, and actually now with the iPhone and GPS and Skyhook and all that, it's more and more, my device knows where I am. What else is, what's happening around me? That's interesting.
Yeah.
I think it's really kind of, cool and scary.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Cool. If it's pulling the information and making decisions about it. Now, if it's pushing your location out, certainly without you knowing, that's bad. And even with you knowing, with applications like Brightkite and Looped and all that stuff, people could follow you around. Certainly they could follow me around. And sometimes that's okay. And sometimes it's probably not, but.
So if you plan on following me or Dave around, please, give us a heads up. So.
That's right. Okay, our first sponsor for the show is Smile on My Mac, and this week and this month we're talking about Disk Label. Now, Disk Label is a piece of software that allows you to create labels, cases, jewel case inserts, DVD case inserts, all on your own. It's got templates built into it, or you can design them from scratch. It pulls in track information from iTunes or photos or photo names from iPhoto and supports just about every label that you can buy, including the direct to CD printers, the LightScribe and the Disc Painter and that sort of thing. There's a screencast that Don McAllister, you know, from Screencasts Online, Smile on My Mac has a screencast that he did for them up there that kind of walks you through this. It is so easy to create labels that look really, really professional and really, really cool. And the idea is here, you know, you can, we're heading into the holiday season. The economy is, let's say, iffy. We don't really know what's going on. But, you know, here you stretch your holiday budget, right? By creating stuff yourself. You do some, you know, build some, maybe a DVD or some, you know, family photos, and you put some music to it, and then you can build your own custom Disc Label with Disc Label. And they've got, I think it's a huge clip art library that you can download along with it. Of course, there's a free trial available at smileonmymac.com, and then you can purchase for $39.95. So that's Disc Label, and Disc Label 5.3 was just released, which includes support for Aperture and multiple iPhoto libraries, which actually is something that more and more of us all do. So
nice.
Smile on
My Mac. Labels rock.
Yeah. Yeah, they can. They certainly can. And this makes it easy for those of us that have perhaps less Photoshop ability, right? Which is me.
You know, I'm in that camp.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. All right. Let's George? Go on to some questions. Yeah, let's see what old
George
has to say.
Hi, Dave and John. This is George from Massachusetts. I've listened to the Mac Geek Gab for several years, and I think you guys are terrific. My question has to do with access to public Wi-Fi sites that require you to pay a fee to use them. I've run into these sites, for example, at some airports. In a variety of your podcasts, you've described how to secure a home wireless network. Because these sites are open to the public, though, they don't employ any of the privacy techniques you've described, such as WPA2 password protection or wireless MAC address access control lists. Given all that, my question is, what prevents another user who is accessing the same wireless network from observing the credit card information those networks ask you to enter? For example, could an identity thief simply connect to such a public network, run a sniffer application on his or her computer, and record your credit card information? Thanks for the help, and keep up the good show.
Thanks, George. Great question. So the idea is you've got to enter a credit card, right, John, when you connect to these public Wi-Fi networks, or some of them. And that it seems counterintuitive to me, and of course to George, that you'd want to do this on a network that is by its very nature insecure. Or is it?
Yes. Well, what I've seen, and for the people that want to, you know, purely from a educational standpoint, want to see what this is all about, getting something like Wireshark or another packet monitor will show you that in general on wireless access points, a lot of things get flinged about that are probably not meant versus a switch or something. Based on what I've seen in a lot of airports and stuff, just based on the number of, like, the last time when we were at the podcast expo, when I was in Vegas, oh my gosh, there were probably 15 people in the airport sharing their iTunes library, and they probably didn't know it or they weren't aware of it. So, what I'm saying is that it's easy to share things that you don't want people to see. So to get back to the question, what you should make sure of is that if you are accessing, you know, the sort of points here, that at the very least you have HTTPS, which means secure connection.
Okay. So looking in the browser window when you're connecting, just like when you're connecting to your bank or anything else, you want it not to say HTTP:// but HTTPS.
Yes. And some browsers, IE7 does something special, Firefox, and a lot of times it's really kind of obscure. But if you look at the address bar, if you have one, which you should, or enable it, if you see HTTPS, that means your traffic between you and whatever you're talking to is secure. In that case, I would enter the credit card.
Now, Safari also indicates this by putting a little silhouette of a lock in the upper right-hand corner of the browser window just to kind of drive that point home. So,
right. So, and I guess the only thing that I and maybe you feel is not quite right. A lot of times there are some browsers like Firefox, I think initially, and some browsers will say, hey, you're connecting to whatever. Do you want to know if it's secure or not? And you're usually like, go away. You're interfering with my browsing experience. But anyways, to get down to the question,
got it.
If you're going to log into a unknown, you know, if it looks legit, it probably is. I hope. Don't do a point to point. Only do a network connect. Not a ad hoc connection, because that's wrong.
Right.
And there are actually some things living still on some Windows machines. I still see under the ad hoc network, which is a point-to-point computer-to-computer network, I still see Windows machines advertising public Wi-Fi on ad hoc networks, which is wrong, because you can't really, for the most part, do that, unless somebody's trying to scam you. So anyways...
On the Mac, just to be clear, on the Mac, ad hoc networks, which are networks that people have created themselves on their own computer, as opposed to an infrastructure network where you're connected to a base station, they will show up separately, and there'll be a distinction between the regular infrastructure networks and the ad hoc networks in your airport little drop-down menu from the menu bar, and it says computer to computer, I believe. Right, John? I think that's I think that's what it says. And so
sounds
there'll be
right.
a category heading that says computer to computer. Only choose that if you are absolutely certain of what it is you're connecting to. So, and that was poor English,
line,
but great message on my part.
So the bottom line is initial connection, make sure there's an S. Past that, then you probably want to use a VPN or something like that. It never hurts.
Yeah. That's right. And, you know, Pilot Pete uses, we got to ask him about this. He's not here. I think he's actually in the air at the moment. Uses a kind of a public VPN service. It's for pay, but it's relatively cheap. But with all the traveling he does, he connects to this VPN. And then he knows, you know, that he's secure no matter where he is. So, I don't know. I don't have to write it down to ask him. He'll listen to the show. He'll know, and he'll put it on the list to mention next time.
To back off, VPN is virtual private network. It's basically securing traffic between my computer and your computer through various devious cryptographic means, usually.
That's right.
I know a little about this, but, you know, if it's done right, like SSL for an HTTPS connection like we were talking about, suffice to say, if your traffic is encrypted with that, people who are evil will move on to something easier. So
one would hope. Cool.
Yep. Now, we talked about Wireshark. I mean, that's a good. And actually, I had a little bout with Wireshark because apparently the latest version on the Intel machine I have at work now, which is fun, the Mac Mini, apparently you have to run a startup script to change permissions on the device that lets you look at other network devices. It's kind of squirrely. I don't know if you've done Wireshark lately.
No. Interesting.
It's kind of weird, but because I'm on my G5, it just kind of installed and it showed all the interfaces, but apparently there have been changes in the way I'll link to a article about the details, but suffice to say, on Intel machines, what I've seen, you can't just install Wireshark, but Wireshark is great, especially if you're in an airport and you want some entertainment.
Oh, yeah.
Even if you don't authenticate on their wireless access point, as long as you get a connection of any sort, I've done this, and I probably should stop.
It's just you're trying to quit. Is that right? There's a support group, you know. We'll be meeting at Macworld.
Macworld, speaking of.
Yeah, let's talk about Macworld. Yeah, we'll jump around the agenda. So Macworld Expo is January 5th through 9th, as most of you know. There's a couple things happening at Macworld Expo. So
there's lots. There's too much happening.
Actually, that's true. Yeah. So the Mac Observer and Backbeat Media, along with our sponsors for the party, which I'll go ahead and announce right now. And I'm hoping.
Wow.
Yeah, I wasn't planning on doing this, so I'm gonna do this from memory. So we have Ambrosia, Dr. Bot, Ecelerate, Microsoft, the Mac business unit, and Sonic, the Roxio folks. So those are our sponsors for the party course hosted by the Mac Observer and Backbeat Media, Cirque du Mac 6.0. This is the 6th year we're doing it. Will be happening on Wednesday night. The location is chosen, locked in, and undisclosed. That may change as we move forward, but for now we have moved it. It is at a more appropriate location. Not that there was anything wrong with Red Devil, but it was a little bit
packed the house.
Well, yeah, and that was it. It was a little bit overpacked. Packed is good. Mm. Red Devil kind of in the last couple of years got to overpacked. So we found this other place that I really think is just going to be absolutely perfect. So that's Cirque du Mac 6. That's Wednesday night. That is invite only, and you need an invite, and we'll work on getting some for you folks here later in December. We can worry about that then, but that is the...
I'll pimp myself right now and say, if you see me on the show floor and you recognize me, I may have a ticket.
One. Absolutely.
Just one.
So where
maybe two or three or...
Go ahead. No, this is good. So where will you see us on the show floor? Well...
We're on the show floor?
Yeah, on Tuesday.
What did you do?
On Tuesday afternoon, so January 6th, so keynote day, Tuesday at 4:30 p.m., John and I will be in booth 3036 in the North Hall. This is the Macworld Learning Center. So there's a little stage there. There's seating, and you folks can come watch us do a live podcast. Now, we're going to do a podcast like this, similar to this. So if nobody shows up, we're still doing it.
Well, I'd be fired. It's after the keynote, right?
Right.
I think we'd probably talk a bit about that.
Absolutely. Yeah. We'll share our keynote
questions.
We'll share our keynote reactions. We will happily take questions from folks
the staff.
That are there. Yeah, absolutely.
We're going to have a good staff there.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're doing that. That's at 4:30 on Tuesday. Then at 2:30 on Thursday, John and I are back in the same place, booth 3036, doing another keynote. Now, typically we do three podcasts at Macworld. We usually do one once we've both hit the ground, sort of our pre-show thing. That one's always one that we say we're not sure if we're going to do, but 9 times out of 10, we do it. We always do the one on Tuesday after the keynote. So we talked about that. Then the Thursday one will be our reactions and picks from the show floor. So we'll talk about some of the TMO Editor's Choice Awards that struck our fancy, and we'll you know, anything else that sort of popped up on our
we're doing
geek.
That?
We're doing that too. Yep.
The editors?
Yeah, the editors.
That's kind of rough last time.
It was good. That was a great thing. It was feisty. And then on Thursday morning, so that's at 2:30 p.m., the live podcast. Thursday morning at 11 a.m., I'm doing my Running Your Mac Lean, Clean, and Mean. I have a room for that. I don't know it off the top of my head, but, you know, I'm thinking I might have been smart enough to put it in my calendar. So if iCal could actually open here and not crash on me, you know, that would be a good thing, and I could mention the room. But you need to have a pass to get into that room. It's in room, you know, I don't know where it is. It's US 931 is the session. It is in room 2001 across the street in the West Hall, which is where all the conference sessions are. In order to get into the conference sessions, though, you need a pass, a conference pass, a user's pass.
Wow.
A power tools, you know, something more than just an expo hall pass. Early bird pricing on those goes until December 1st, but we have at least two, perhaps three of them to give away to you folks. Now, this is a contest. We're doing another little contest here, John. And this one's actually open up not just to listeners of the Geek Gab, but to listeners of both podcasts here at the Mac Observer, the Apple Weekly Report, and of course, our Mac Geek Gab, and anyone who reads the site. But we had so much fun with the haikus last time, and we only did it here for the podcast. So we're going to open up and we're going to do haikus for everybody. So being that early bird pricing ends on December 1st, we wanted to make sure that anyone who didn't win the contest still had the opportunity to take advantage of that. So between now and the end of the day on November 24th, readers and listeners of TMO's site and podcast can submit haikus to be considered. There's an article up on the site that talks about all this. We'll link to it. In essence, you send your haiku to haiku@macobserver.com. We will get them. We will evaluate them. We will judge them. The TMO staff is the final judge and jury with all of these. So what we pick goes. That's right. As with
anybody can veto, right?
Absolutely. Haikus must be your own original work. If we can find the haiku on Google with someone else as the author, you might want to use a different one.
And we'll send the TMO goons to talk to you.
That's right. The top prize is a Power Tools conference pass valued at $925. The runner up will receive a user's conference pass for $350. Both will get you in to the session that I'm doing and any other sessions that are happening as part of those conferences. And you can look on Macworld's website to see the difference between the two. Winners will be announced on the site and via email to the email from which the haiku came on November 26th, which is the Wednesday prior to Thanksgiving. We are not, this is only for conference passes. So we are not providing travel. You must already be planning to go to do this, but there's no cost to enter. And you may submit as many haikus as you like. So haiku at macobserver.com. The subject, the topic, the capitalization of the haiku is totally up to you. But of course, anything that has to do with TMO or the Mac or Macworld Expo or Mac Geek Gab or whatever is certainly most likely going to gain preference. So
you think?
I do think. I know so, actually, because I know one of the judges. I think I know more than one of the judges.
Me too.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly.
I hope.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's it. That's everything for Macworld.
Excellent. I'm pumped.
And we are prepping. So there's two things going on here. We will do a podcast between probably sometime in December talking about our and your Macworld Expo tips. So send them in to us. We've already got some in. They're coming in really nicely. So that's happening. Then the first week of December, as is typical, I'm leaving. I'm gone. Totally detaching from the grid. We're going to Disney World.
Sweet.
I'll run an interview with Paul Kent that we will do prior to that. And some of you have actually already sent in some questions for us to ask Paul.
Which they is, have.
I know. And so smart. You people are so
ask.
Smart. Yeah.
He may not answer, but I think he will because Paul is just that type of
guy. He's a swell guy. And Paul, of course, will be playing with me in the Macworld All-Star Band on Wednesday night at Cirque du Mac 6.
He's smoking.
He is. He's
last great. I saw.
Yeah, man. He's great. So that's that. That's Macworld Expo, right? We did it all? We did it all. Okay, so send in your questions, send in your tips. And with that, we move right on to Peter.
Hi, John and Dave. This is Peter from Syracuse, New York. I've got another question for you guys. I'm running a brand new iMac 24-inch here at my work. And every night when I go home, something happens so that when I return in the morning, there is a process called applet taking up 100% of one of the CPU cycles. It seems to be a child process of one of the kernel tasks, but I have no idea what it is. Is there some way that I can figure out what's causing this applet to open up and take up all my CPU? When I force quit it, nothing seems to happen, and I just don't know what's causing it. Is there a way that you can actually dig for a little bit more information than Activity Monitor gives you as far as the parent of an application or process? This is where you cut me off.
And we will cut you off. Okay, so
cut him off.
What do you think about this, John?
Well, I think did I hear correct? It was kind of hard to hear. Did he say applet?
Applet. That's what I heard too.
Applet. If he said applet, applet is a kind of Java deal.
That would be my guess. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but I'm trying to think about why this thing runs. And I think what you and I, Dave, we kicked around this a bit. And I think the best way to figure out what is running this, because so he's seeing it, I guess, in Activity Monitor.
Right.
But if you have a process in Activity Monitor and you double click on it, which is not immediately obvious.
Right.
Hey, you get a window that shows you some other interesting things. And for the most part, if you double click on something, you can then click on
open files and ports is the tab you want to go to.
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. Right. Isn't that where we're going?
think so.
Yeah, it is. Open files and ports. Now, when you look
Open files and ports. You're right. So, so it shows a kind of text dump of all the things that have happened recently to launch that task. And then I guess, Dave, you zeroed in. So I'll toss it back to you on what am I seeing and what does it mean?
Right. So what you're seeing there, and it might help to stretch the window wide open, but what you're seeing is a list of every file on your hard drive that and some of these might be devices, so they might be virtual files, but it essentially lists the name and location of every file, the full path of every file that this application or this process is touching. More often than not, either the top one or the second one listed, and there's going to be, you know, dozens, if not hundreds, if not thousands of files shown here. Because
I'm on tens, at least, than the one I'm looking at, which is,
But
it could be scary.
Right, yeah, it's going to be scary. You can ignore the bottom because really you're looking at the top. It shows them basically in the order in which they've been accessed. So the first one or the second one is more often than not going to point you toward the application. So if, for example, if you're running iChat, right, and I don't have iChat running, so I'm going to say something else. If you're running Skype, which I happen to be running, if I go to open files and ports on Skype, the first thing that is listed there is applications slash Skype slash content slash macOS slash Skype. And then the second one is users, Dave, library, application support, Skype. So, I'm pretty darn sure I know where the application is. Look for the one in the applications folder and boom, you're there. So that would, to me, that would help Peter kind of zero in on at least what's causing this. May not give you much of an indication why, but at least the what is answered and then you can
now, sort of. Maybe console, our friend console, Dave, I love console. But you may want to go on console and see if whatever app you're seeing in the first few has generated any. And I don't know if there's a way to do that directly through Activity Monitor. I don't think so.
No, I don't think there is. I think
console is also a good place. You know, if things are starting to get wonky, look in console. I think there's a, I don't see it in front of me right now, but system log and a few other files that usually if there's a catastrophic or, you know, really upsetting error, it'll place something there. So,
yeah.
We'll cover the whole field here.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What next?
All right. Well, we jumped around a little bit. I was going to play this as sort of the intro to Macworld, but we played our own little intro to Macworld. So I just wanted to. Well, Dave has something.
Hey, guys. My name's Dave. Listen to the latest episode 174 where John's venting about the trade show and them charging for Wi-Fi. I just wanted to chime in, and I thought you guys would find it funny. I was at a trade show in Las Vegas Convention Center about a month and a half ago, and different industry. I'm in sales and the cleaning industry, so it's not a tech thing, but I thought it was quite outrageous that the only Wi-Fi network I could see in the convention hall was for vendors. And I tried to pull it up, and it brought me to the login page. And obviously, I didn't have an account, so they show the charges. $600 for 24 hours that they wanted to charge the vendors just to get on Wi-Fi. I just thought that was absolutely freaking ridiculous. But anyways, obviously, no need to respond and stuff, but in case you wanted to just share another story or whatever, my email is...
All right, there you go.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think for a day's worth of access at a trade show, it's worth what I pay in a year for the same level of access at my house. I don't know about you, Dave.
I have to say, we've looked at booths at various trade shows over the years, and I can't remember which one it was, but I think it was recent. It may have been ad tech because we were toying with the idea of doing a booth. But don't hold me to this, but I've certainly seen where Wi-Fi or not Wi-Fi, internet for the day costs wired internet costs $1,000 per booth.
Again, the price you could get a entire month,
entire year,
consumer, or a year. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
if not a month,
I don't pay a grand a month. Yeah,
yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I mean a year.
Yeah,
Well, yeah, I mean, there are costs involved in setting up and wiring, and but
profit center, two words. That's all it takes.
Yep. There we go.
Yep.
Moving on.
Yeah. If they can get it, they can get it. Okay. So our second sponsor here is Circus Ponies with Notebook 3.0. You've heard us talk about this before. Now, this software is an electronic notebook, or it allows you to build multiple electronic notebooks. And inside each notebook, you can tie together, of course, your notes in an outline form. You can put PDFs in. You can put sketches, diagrams, and text. It's even got handwriting recognition software. So if you're scratching notes out on a tablet, or if with your mouse, if you're so inclined, or even if you scan something in that you've pulled in, it will go through and do handwriting recognition, the new version allows you to do diagrams and sketches, and you can annotate PDFs right inside the notebooks. So you can pull together all sorts of different things in unrelated formats, all into one notebook, so that if you've got a project going on, or if you have, say, a class you're taking and you need to tie all this stuff together, Notebook 3.0 from Circus Ponies will do it. It is available now. I know when we started talking about this, it hadn't come out yet, but it is available now. If you are a Notebook 2.0 user and you bought it in the last year, or essentially bought it in 2008, so not in the last year, but bought it this year, you can upgrade to version 3.0 for free. If you bought it prior to that, it's $19.95 to upgrade before November 30. After that, it's $29.95, and a full license is $39.95. As with everything these days, there is a free trial available. So if you haven't used it before, go ahead to circusponies.com, download it, give it a test, give it a try. And once you're ready to go, $39.95 right there inside the app or at their website. So Circus Ponies Notebook 3.0. And as always, we appreciate their sponsorship. Moving along, I think it's time It's time for Tim.
Tim?
I think so.
Go, Tim.
Sure, why not? We'll take it.
Hello, John and Dave. My name's Tim. I'm in Danbury, Connecticut.
Hey.
I have a MacBook Pro 17-inch Intel machine, and I use several external DACs, or digital audio converters, to route sound to different devices on my office, from headphones to speakers and whatnot. I'd like to know if there's any way I can route the sound to two of the DACs at the same time. I've tried many different utilities and the control panel, but I only ever seem to be able to route the sound output from my system to any one DAC at any one time. So I'd like to use at least two at once, if not more. Do you know of any utilities or anything that'll let me do this? Thank you.
Yeah, actually I do. I'm using one of them right now, and you've probably heard me talk about it if you've listened to the show for any length of time. Audio Hijack Pro from Rogue Amoeba. This software, not for the faint at heart. The UI is not really built to hold your hand or walk you through anything, but you could, inside Audio Hijack Pro, you hijack whatever sound it is that you want to route to multiple places. Now, this could just be system audio, and that's certainly an option. So you're capturing everything. And then you go into effects and you create an effect called, I don't want to screw this up, auxiliary device output. And that is in the 4FX effect group inside Audio Hijack Pro. So you create an effect, you go to 4FX effects and choose auxiliary device output, and then send the sound out to whatever you want. And you can do multiple auxiliary device outputs in parallel, and it will send it out to everything simultaneously. I've done it here. We use Audio Hijack in addition to Wiretap Anywhere from Ambrosia. So that's Audio Hijack from Rogue Amoeba, Wiretap Anywhere from Ambrosia, to kind of reroute all the audio and make the show so that we can record and mix it, quote unquote, live. So,
yeah.
All right. Back to Peter, right, John? Not Peter that we heard from, but Peter that wrote in, because he's having some sound problems too.
Mm.
Yeah. He says, I was messing with the sound settings and system preferences the other day so I could record some guitar riffs with my audio cord. The only thing I recall changing is the default input, but for some reason, since I changed that setting, the OS doesn't play notification sounds. For example, when I empty the trash, no crumpling paper noise. When I move a file, there isn't that usual clinging noise, or in iChat, when I get a new message, it doesn't beep at me. Error messages also have no sound accompanying them. When I adjust the volume, it still makes that notification sound, and the sound still works with web pages, iTunes, movies, etc., but not with the OS notifications. Any idea what setting I have to change to get this back? So, John, you had a good path here on this one.
I did.
I think so.
Of course I did. So you go to sound. So system preferences, sound effects. And what you're going to notice here is a couple of finer tuned options here. Plays user interface sound effects and play feedback when volume is changed. So I would dig into this control panel and just see if things are set up the way you think they are. Now, what Dave and I also found. Okay. Now, there's also another place you could look at where there are some pref files that, you know, if things are really kind of messed up, you want to nuke. And I don't have them in front of me here right now.
I have them. You prepped them. I'll read them. So library. So hard drive, library, preferences, com.apple.audio.device settings.plist, and com.apple.audio.systemsettings.plist. Yeah.
So basically, yeah, if you're really in a rough state where your sounds are not doing what they should, and I think I've run into this, Dave, I think actually at work I'm running into this, but go and nuke those, you know, delete those files. Maybe you want to back them up just in case, but then delete those files and recreate them, and in all likelihood, you'll get what you're looking for. Because I've run into this too. Every now and then, your machine doesn't make any sound. What do you do?
Yep.
Get rid of the prep files. Okay.
So the interesting thing is you had prepped all that information and I sent it off to Peter, and Peter wrote back and he says, the funny thing was that setting, the play user interface sound effects setting, was on. He says, I should have mentioned that in my original email, but I forgot. Anyway, I unchecked it, then rechecked it, restarted, and all my sound came back. So to me, that speaks to exactly what you were saying with a potentially damaged preference file. Rewriting that setting may very well have done it. As we were going through this, I was reminded of when I had the same issue where iChats wouldn't come through. And this was on a previous version of, I think it was a previous 10.5. It wasn't Tiger. It was definitely Leopard. But what I had to do was go into the Audio MIDI setup application and change. And I don't know why this happens, but the sample rate got changed. So instead of being at, I think it's 44.1, it was at 36 or something kilohertz, and nothing was working right. So I changed the sample rate, and boom, everything worked right. So that may also be a place to check.
Audio MIDI, that's a really weird.
Oh yeah, app. Yeah, yeah, it is a weird app, but yeah, you go to the audio tab in that, not the MIDI tab, obviously, and then you can set the sample rate.
But actually, mine's 222/2007, so maybe not that odd.
Yeah, yeah, I don't know. Your Skype's doing weird things again, but it did it again earlier, and then it magically got better. So we'll see if that bandwidth manager in Skype does its thing. All right. Where are we time wise here? Do we have, we should have, well, yeah, we should definitely talk about Aaron because he did something very cool. Yeah. Aaron says, I was listening to your latest podcast, number 174, and my ears perked up when I heard you talking about Time Machine and sparse bundle errors. And I know this is something near and dear to your heart, John. The reason being
big problems.
You and Jeff Gamut, right? Two of you on the TMS.
Jeff is not, if it's me and Jeff, it's bigger than both of us. So.
That's right. The reason being, I just gone through just such a failure as you described in your show. And as you suggested, it wasn't the first time that it happened to me. But the only time it has happened to me is when I sleep my MacBook when it's in the midst of a backup. I found a way to fix the problem after the fact and blogged about it. So we'll link to this blog. But John, you sort of dissected this a little bit. You want to talk about what he found here?
No. Well, I could. But basically what I think he found is that it's a FSC, it's a low-level Unix utility that helps you deal with this, which, Dave, I think you probably know more about than I do, but it's a FSCK or a variation thereof, FSCK-HFS.
Right.
Will repair this damaged file. So I think the thing that was brought up is that the file is damaged. How do you fix it? A lot of times the solutions, either through Deuce Utility or whatever, you know, sometimes the finder would say, yep, I don't know, it's read only. It's like, that's not very useful. So anyways, we got an article that talks about a specific command line solution to fixing the disk as best as the macOS can do.
Interesting. Yeah, FSCK. So it's similar to it's what Disk Utility runs effectively when you tell it to repair disk. But he's got some there's a switch that he's putting in there that I don't think Disk Utility does that rebuilds things in a different way. So yeah, FSCK goes through the directory tree and fixes any lost pointers and B trees and all of that. Happy haha, I think is that's the technical word, right? Happy.
Yes. Happy, I concur.
Happy haha. All right. Cool. All right. You know what?
I think
it's time to bring the band in, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Aren't they kind of chilly?
Yeah, it's starting to get
where's
cold
the band?
Here.
Oh. Come on.
I tried to bring the band in. And, you know, why does it always happen at the end of the show that when I try to bring the band in, the sound stutters a little bit there?
There we go. The band.
They were there. They're gone. Oh. I don't hear them anymore. Do you hear them? Great. Beautiful. Really nice. Let's try this again.
There we go.
What the heck is going on here? Well, that's really nice. That's special, isn't it?
You gonna pause or what?
I don't think so. I'm gonna try it again. That's really nice. Yeah. That's special.
What's going on up there? It's too cold up there.
I guess that's what it is. It's just gone. That's beautiful. That's beautiful. You know, we played all the comments. There's nothing different about this. So here's what I do. I have Wiretap Anywhere grabbing the audio from Yojimbo and routing it to a virtual device as Wiretap Anywhere does, and then we're routing that out to the thing. I don't know why. Yeah.
Go.
All of our audio comments, every single audio comment you've heard is
perfect.
Being played exactly the same way, though, all from Yojimbo. So I can't.
So what you're saying is you don't know what the problem is. So
that's exactly right.
I'm really kind of disappointed.
There's no logic behind why all the audio comments worked. And then now
I thought you were the geek.
I thought I was the geek too. So the question is, can I unhijack this and rehijack it? And while we're talking,
I think we're
here,
done.
I'm pretty sure we're done there. But
you're gonna get a snippet out of this.
I'm gonna get something.
Roar.
All right, here we go. I think I got it.
You're kidding.
I think I fixed it. I kid you not.
206666 geek.
That's right. Oh yes, we've got all the contact info to do.
What?
You know, I had it in the middle of the show.
We did that.
No, we didn't do it. We talked about doing it. It was in the schedule, but we're in the agenda, but we didn't do it. So, audio comments. We like those. We play them. They work. Mm-hmm.
they
can be sent to
perfection.
That's right. They can be sent to feedback@macgeekgab.com. You can attach them. You can call us, and the number, John, is
206-666-GEEK. MacGeek, which is
4335, and you can Skype them to us. Folks, I promise you, we have tested this now. I'm at least 19% certain that we have fixed this problem with Skype and have it so that you can see it. And I would really appreciate a couple of you or, you know, and I, of course, I asked this and I thought I'm just going to get hundreds of these, but that's fine. Test it out for us, please. I worked with the folks at Skype. They pointed us in the right direction. And I think we've got it. Yeah. We've got it right. So you can also email us questions.
What?
You type them in text, prose. You can type them in haiku if you want. You can type poetry. It doesn't matter. You can send that to feedback@macgeekgab.com as well. Mm. The Skype thing, you know, here we talked about Skype. I didn't say what it was. It's MacGeekGab. And you should be able to search in Skype and find it. And then lastly, but certainly not leastly, iTunes comments are always, always, always appreciated.
Awesome.
Yeah. You guys rock. And I say you guys, I mean that in the... in the sense that our friends to the south use y'all. It's an all-inclusive term.
You include the gals.
Absolutely. Oh,
Is that okay to say? Can I say gal?
I hope so.
Without getting, like, beaten?
I don't think you mean anything by it, other than exactly what you mean by it.
What part of there's a musical, like Guys and Dolls? I mean, yeah. Hey. Yeah,
that's right.
Say guy, you can say gal. Right.
I think so. I mean, I don't know what else. What other term you'd use? Is guys derogatory? Mm. I don't think so. Mm-hmm. Thankfully, this isn't the politically correct geek gab. Although we try to be politically correct, we just don't.
No,
try
we
to,
don't.
We don't try to gab about being politically correct. No, we certainly don't. Yeah. Enter the contest here at TMO. Send your haikus to haiku@macobserver.com. We look forward to reading all of your submissions.
And laughing behind closed doors.
That's right.
Such.
Michael Johnston at iPhone Alley will have converted this to AAC for you. Typically, he tries to do them at night. His schedule lately has been such that he's done them first thing in the morning on Tuesdays. So for those of you that are missing out on it, that's why. CashFly Hosting provides all the bandwidth and server storage for all of the episodes of the Mac Geek Gab. The podcast marketplace includes the A2 desktop speakers from Audio Engine, BB Edit from Barebones Software, Disc Label from Smile on My Mac, Notebook from Circus Ponies, and back again this month, Audible. At audiblepodcast.com/MacGeekGab, so you can look forward to some book reviews from John and I a little bit later this month.
Nice. Hi, yeah. Audible.
All through the Backbeat Media Podcast Network. And that's it. That gets us out of here. Let's hope the music keep playing, right?
Oh, you hit the button.
I hit the magic button. I'm going to be in Austin next week, but we'll do a show. I'll bring my Rode podcaster, and we'll do it from the office there.
Oh.
Which means I have to travel again.
Oh, I know what that means.
What's that?
You're going to get caught.
Made up.